Hello, Monarch fans, and welcome to the Hudson Homers podcast. I'm Gary, and I'm joined, as always, by CB. CB, we go 3-1 this week. We beat VCU. I'm feeling good. How about you?
I'm feeling great. The VCU victory was fantastic. Got another conference series win. The weather got a little stupid on us this weekend. Friday was unnecessarily cold, like in the 40s. Wind all night. Saturday, I thought it would be decently okay. It was just terrible and cold. And then Sunday, even though the game was finished up by like, what, 1:30, it was still pretty hot and sweaty. But I'll take the hot and sweaty over the cold.
We had three baseball games this weekend, and each one of them was played in a different season, which I thought was nice. You had winter, then you kind of had a fall, early spring, and then you had the summer game on Sunday. It was great.
Yeah, it was. You really got the experience at all. Virginia is always good for it.
We go 3-1 this week. Let's get you caught up here on dollars for dingers and bucks for bags. Kenny Lavari did some lifting for us this weekend, but we are at 37 dingers on the season, and then we are at 70 stolen bases. So 70 for the bucks for bags. We are at $107 total if you're going to put that all together in a savings account for an ODAF donation at the end of the year. But love seeing 70 for 88 still on stolen bases.
Yeah, I was doing some searching here. We apparently, as a team in 22 and 23, both had 77 steals. But other years before that, it was like 39, 66, 41, 55. There wasn't 81 back in 2016. So we're pretty well on pace to have about as many steals as we've had in a season for at least the last decade. And with 22, Stephen Meyer, he has as many or more than anybody's had in the last decade. I think Connor Myers had a year with 19 and a year with 20. So Stephen's had more than anybody's had in a while here at ODU. And even Luke Waters got 17. So they're both way up there.
Yeah, absolutely. Going to continue to steal bases, going to continue to play the small ball. We saw that play out. We saw the Bud Bombers return for a little bit, or at least Kenny Lavari put on the Bud Bomber shirt and cranked a couple out of the ballpark Saturday for the alumni event. Awesome, awesome crowd back there. I know Mike McHugh was really happy with the turnout. I'm pretty sure he sold out of all the merchandise that he brought with him, which is great because that all kicks back to the program. But I think some great times had by all. I know you got to go over and chat with him for a little bit.
Yeah, I got to chat with Mike. I got to talk with a few of the guys from about 10 years ago team, and saw a few here or there. So I didn't see Connor Myers, one of my favorite human beings that's ever lived on the planet Earth. But there are a lot of, everybody I saw, a lot of great people. It was definitely a really good time out there Saturday, seeing all the alumni. I just walked over. I really got kind of caught up for about a half inning talking. And that's when I didn't realize the other team had scored four runs, and it was all of a sudden close to us in that game, because I was just out there talking with Brandon Smith and John Malbin and Josh Wright and Brandon Shelton. Chris Baker, another one of my favorite people, Chris Baker. So it was a really good time.
Yeah, great time had by all. Glad to see that event grow, and hopefully it can be even bigger here, I guess, in two seasons. Probably won't do it next year, but a TBD on that. Maybe it's something they work out at Harbor Park. But we started the week off in a very fun way. I did not have a fantastic day on Tuesday, but I sure enjoyed watching the boys knock off VCU 7-1.
And it wasn't even that.
Yeah, it was not. I mean, it was what, 1-1 after the first inning, and then VCU didn't score again. They only had one run on two hits. What an amazing job by our pitching staff in that midweek.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the thing about it. The pitching staff was just phenomenal.
Nick Sulpizio got the start for us, went two innings, gave up just one run on one hit. He had one walk. Did hit three batters, so he's a little bit wild, but you know, he was able to just limit that to one run over those two innings. Yeah, Hudson Trobaugh got an inning, struck out two. Steven Trone, he got two outs. Kellen Davis went an inning and a third, got three strikeouts, no runs, no hits, just the one walk. I mean, it's a parade of guys. Aiden Cool, Vincent Becerra got two, and then Lincoln Ransom closed it out, getting all of his outs via strikeout there in the final inning.
Lincoln looked outstanding there at the end. Bash was great in the middle of that game. Nick Sulpizio is an extremely talented freshman. That's a kid you really can see developing and becoming a big-time arm for ODU. Yeah, Kellen Davis with one of his longer outings of the season just looked great. I mean, it was just a really good night already. Steven Trone coming in doing great work. You're right. I mean, literally Aiden Cool, who's barely gotten to pitch this year, came out and looked fantastic. I mean, it was just all-around dominant pitching, just a wonderful night. Hudson Trobaugh, again, same thing. That's a big time arm who's I think is going to develop into a really good weapon for ODU over the next few years. When you go out and just absolutely dominate one of your all-time school rivals, I mean, what else could you ask for?
It was a thing of beauty, and I'm so happy to see those midweek guys coming out there, doing well with the opportunities that they're getting. And we did see a couple of them pop up over the weekend too, but you know, offensively, this game was a little bit tighter. ODU was up 2-1 for most of the game until we got to that bottom of the seventh, and then the bats caught fire. Kenny Lavari kind of really had the big hit of the inning, which started off a hell of a week for Kenny Lavari. He had a bases-clearing three-run double to right center. Then we had a bases-loaded walk, and then a fielder's choice got that seventh run in. So really just kept stacking those runs up in those seventh inning to make sure we pulled away and got that victory.
Yeah, and that was such a good example of what ODU has kind of struggled with this year, is getting those hits, just piling them up together. We have a lot of times where maybe we get one guy on, maybe we get two guys on, but then we kind of struggle to get those next hits to make the runs happen. Not the case in this game on Tuesday. The guys just kept making it happen. Great night for Kenny. Great week for Kenny. We're going to talk more here in a minute about he's on a big streak right now. Great night for Kyle Edwards, who also had a great week, and TJ Akin, great night with a couple hits, a couple walks, double, just looked really good. So, I mean, it's just all the things you want out of a Tuesday game, beating a rival.
And you bring up TJ Akin, he is our special guest, so you'll hear from him later, but he went 2-for-3 and also had two walks. Hell of a performance by TJ Akin. We had a great conversation with him. He's awesome. We love that he has kind of come in and just grabbed on the left field, like that is his position now, unless, you know, slide over to center we needed. But love seeing his development this year. I know Coach Fimwood is really excited about it. But I can't stress the importance of beating your rivals, like being able to beat your rivals and making sure you know that's a big game and a game that you go out and win. Love to see some of our other sports kind of take off on that. We have a couple that do it really well and a couple that can't do it at all. And would love to see take some of those other teams take the mindset of baseball and women's soccer and tennis and go beat your rivals.
Yeah, I think you pointed out last week that we've kind of had this weird thing where VCU in baseball tends to come down here and win, and then we tend to win up at the Diamond. So it was nice to get that victory here at the Bud, and then hopefully when we play them, not tomorrow Tuesday, but next week Tuesday at the Diamond, get the win there too. I want to point out, it was great to see my buddy Will Flanders. He's a student coach with VCU. He does all kind of their stats and things, and it was a great getting to hang out and see him. He's doing great. He's really enjoying his time at VCU. And it's super fun to give him a hard time about it. Us just whipping him like a post, and got a nice picture of him in his disgusting looking VCU uniform. So that was great.
We rolled that momentum somewhat into Friday for the opener against Louisiana Monroe. You talked about earlier, the weather was not great on Friday. It was cold. The wind was blowing in. It was not your ideal baseball weather. Certainly probably not the way you want to start your series. And for the first time this season, we got extra innings.
Yeah. You know, it was fascinating. One of our student managers, Sam Phelps, he's been with the team. He's a senior. He's been a student manager on the team 4 years. He said, you know, I've never seen the Bud play like this. And me, as someone who's, you know, I've been coming to the Bud since the mid-90s when I was in high school, I said, well, this is how it used to play every single day. There were about 7 different balls that would have been home runs maybe on a different day. Maybe if they happened on Sunday's game, they'd have been home runs. That it played like the old Bud before the chemistry building went up. The ball was just, it was dead. There was a hard 15, 20-mile wind coming in at us all night long, made it miserable to sit and watch. And so there was not a lot of offense going on. But fortunately, we had some phenomenal pitching. Jay Cassidy looked outstanding again. 1 earned run, 5 strikeouts in 4 innings. John Hollibetz was dynamite in relief. 5 1/3 scoreless innings, 6 strikeouts. Kellen Davis came in and got him out of a jam. Brandon Pond came in, threw a great inning. Would have pitched a little more. He took a line drive off his forearm. But then Vincent Bishara came in and was able to relieve things, get 2 strikeouts in his final in a final inning. He ended up getting the win in a beautiful walk-off victory for ODU.
At 12 innings of baseball for ODU pitching, 0 earned runs. That is impressive, and I don't care what kind of weather you're playing in or who you're playing against, to go 12 innings against another Division I program and not give up an earned run is insane to me. And the one unearned run happened in the first inning. So really it was 11 clean innings for that pitching staff. But when push came to shove in the ninth inning, when we needed a run to tie that thing, Alex Boucher, coming off the injury, doubles down the line, scores Hunter Cole, game is tied, and we're on to extras. And then I was sweating at this point when we were getting into the ninth, 10th, because I knew that Kenny Lavari had a hitting streak going, and the only thing that was going to preserve it was extra innings. And he opened up the 12th with a nice double that ended up being the winning run on a wild pitch.
Yeah, he got. I did not know about Kenny's streak. We'll talk. Once we kind of wrap up the weekend, we'll talk about the stretch Kenny's on. He had a great double, got on second, had a very fun kind of celebration. Stephen Meyer, beautifully placed ground out, got him a third base. I'll be honest, I was sitting there and I said to myself, once he was on third base, I said, this guy's going to throw a wild pitch. I really thought I was like, this guy, he just didn't have it. The guy was it Ullman? I think it was the kid's name. Carson Orton. When he came in to warm up, he threw two wild pitches, his first two warm up pitches. And now he pitched a couple of scoreless between then. But I was pretty positive that he was going to throw one away. And that's exactly what he did. And Kenny slid in there, got our first, we got our first extra inning walk off victory of the year. Not hard night to hit. I wish our hitters could have done more. I think we needed to make a little more line drive approach instead of still trying to hit the ball in the air. But it's great to see the team learn how to win in games that are tough to win.
Yeah, and Louisiana Monroe, they came to play. Their pitchers did well. Cam Barlow started with 5 2/3, didn't give up a run, only 2 hits, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts. A lot of flyouts. He got 12 flyouts and 3 groundouts.
Well, that was all the home runs that were just getting hung up.
He was baiting the guys to put it in the air and let it get hung up in the wind and stay in. Paker Say, I think is how you say his name. He went 3 1/3, only gave up the one run there in the ninth inning to tie it, but I thought he pitched well. So they came to play. They were not ready to lay down. They may have entered the weekend at 6-12, but they didn't play like a 6-12 team. And unfortunately, we saw that play out on Saturday with another fun, exciting extra inning game. This time we end up on the wrong side of it, losing 5-4.
Yeah, not as fun because we didn't win, to be honest. We did what we had to get the situation. We scored there in the sixth to tie things up, and it just stayed there. But again, another good day of pitching. Blake had a little bit of struggles there early on. Gomez pitched well. He just happened to give up the runs there at the end. It's just it went how things went. Better. Again, the weather still wasn't great. I think it still affected things some, but it's unfortunate because, as you said, ULM is not a very winning team. It's tough losing them, but it's hard to sweep a series in the Sun Belt. Like you said, this team that has not on paper been very good, played very hard, had some very good individual ball players, and any weekend is going to be a struggle.
And we got off to a great start in this game. TJ Akin ends up tripling to right center. He hit it and it kind of bounced under the wall and just stuck there like it was a perfectly placed pitching wedge. He ends up with the triple, scores on a wild pitch, and we just kind of keep it going where Kyle Edwards gets a single, advances on an error. We get some walks, and then Tyser hits a big 2 RBI double to make it 3-0. So I kind of thought, all right, the bats are breaking out because the wind was still blowing in a little bit, but not nearly to the degree it was on Friday. I thought, all right, we're going to end up run ruling these guys, kind of like what happened to them last weekend. But that was not the case. ULM just kept battling back, and they were able to kind of get some of those big innings on us. They had 4 in the fourth, capped off by a 2-run home run that put them in the lead. We did end up tying it, but I think the missed opportunities in this game are probably what some of the guys are kicking themselves over. One was an opportunity that was taken away by an interference call at second base. Would have basically set us up with runners at the corners with one out. Instead, the runner has to go back to second, and there are 2 outs. I talked to Coach Finney after the game Sunday, and he said they looked at the video, and there was interference. It was the right call. But I think, CB, you and I have an issue with the way the umpire handled the delivery of that call.
I mean, this umpiring crew was terrible. This is one of the worst jobs of umpiring over the course of a weekend I think I've seen. I think the Friday night behind the plate, which is funny because it was the guy with the longer white hair he was actually the behind the plate guy Friday night. He actually did a good job behind the plate. That was probably about the only decent thing all weekend. The guy who did the home plate umpire yesterday and Sunday's game was horrible. If he had a 70% call rate, I would be shocked. They made a bunch of terrible calls. They were just, I mean, at one point I was there and they were going to review and they're walking in and the one guy's like, yeah, we're going to go here and watch this video and make sure that I'm right. It's like, okay, so you're clearly, why is the guy who made the call going in to look at the video? It's supposed to be somebody else. It was embarrassing. The whole, they should, and again, we've had this crew before. They've done a terrible job before. It sucks that you're putting yourself in front of the game. You know, it's hard enough to play baseball without having people be involved in things.
Yeah, and there were three reviews on Saturday. Only two of them actually got reviewed. Being over there in Rally Alley, you have a pretty good view into where the replay room is, at least the corner that they go around. So one, this umpire is chirping at our fans in Rally Alley because the fans are chirping back at him.
Which is insane. I saw that. I was like, why are you talking to the fans? Go do your job.
I don't know. We started calling him the Silver Fox and yelling at him with that because he really liked walking around with his hair out and petting his flow coming out the back. But they literally went in there two of those times. They were in there for 15 to 20 seconds. They didn't look at anything. And then they walked back out and upheld the call that was on the field. And then there were times when there was like a very clear call that was made. And our friend who was there at third on Saturday and at first on Sunday was like, hold on, guys. Put his hands in the air, gathered everyone in. They talked about it. Then they go review it for a couple seconds and then come back out. So I think maybe he was just bored umpiring in the field and wanted to spice things up, had to get the spotlight on him. But really, really had a problem with that guy. And if you were following the Monarch's social media account on Twitter on Saturday, I put out the video of his little incident that he had at East Carolina earlier this year when they were hosting UAB. UAB's coach went out to do a mound visit, essentially because he was behind the plate. He was terrible all day. And the manager wanted to get into him a little bit. So he was hoping the umpire would come out, break up the mound visit, and he would get to chew his ear for a minute. Well, what happened was is the guy behind the dish was just afraid to go out there to the mound visit. So he stood behind home for 3 minutes, refusing to go break up the mound visit before he finally went out there and broke it up. The East Carolina fans were all over him. They're the ones that put out the video, and we just kind of retweeted it on Saturday of like, this is who you're dealing with. But that's just not the way you handle things. I can deal with bad calls here and there and longer reviews and stuff, but trying to showboat and make it about you, that's not what that job is about.
Yeah, it's embarrassing. I mean, if you're an umpire, I shouldn't even know you're there. It should be really the time I notice an umpire is when I go, wow, you know what? Every call felt right. That was a good night because the guy did a good job. And this guy's a clown, and the other two guys are just also bad at their job. They're just not clowns about it. They're just not good at their job. It sucks. It really makes for a less fun weekend to have to just all weekend when you feel like everyone's fighting. And it's both sides. Everybody's fighting the umpire. I'm sure the ULM people are probably sitting here at the same time talking about how terrible they are because they're bad.
They made some rough ones each way, and then just the replay review process was a joke. But, you know, as Coach Finwood said after the game Sunday, that interference call is not why we lost that game because we had other opportunities to win it. None bigger than the ninth inning. You have bases loaded, no outs in a tie game, and really just some of the worst luck you can kind of get. Jake Tyser comes up, and Jake had absolutely been murdering the baseball that day. He had hit one that I think he said was the hardest ball he's hit all season. It just got knocked down by the wind a little bit and didn't go out. But in this situation, he hit that kind of high chopper back to first. They were able to go home back to first for the double play. Then we had another ground out, kind of wasted that opportunity. Bases loaded, no outs. You're going to get a run in 9 times out of 10 there.
Yeah, when we got second and third with no outs and couldn't do anything with it, that's pretty frustrating. Because, you know, at that point, it's like just hit the ball in the air. All you guys are trying to hit the ball in the air all the time. Hit the ball, you know, really hard to the right side. They obviously intentionally walked Luke Waters because, of course, you're going to do that. And then Tyser, he makes so many insanely hard ground balls to the second baseman playing in like deep, you know, almost in shallow right field. One of those would have been perfect. So he just happened to have an at bat where he hit it. Usually he either hits a fly ball or he hits a ball, like I said, a hard line drive, even if it's for a ground out. And so he just hit the wrong way at the wrong time. And it's frustrating because then at that point, you know, we got two outs now with only a runner on third, and easy to make an out at that point. So it's frustrating. It's happened a lot. We've had a lot of chance times where we had guys on, and we had one in the game, I think on Sunday, where had guys at second and third and had back-to-back strikeouts looking. You know, just like, it's one of those things that I've said it before. I'll say it over and over again. You got to put the ball in play. This is not the major leagues. I don't think anybody's ever been to the Bud and confused it for a major league ballpark. I love it. It's a great place to go, but it's not Fenway or whatever. You got to put the ball in play. These guys will throw it away. Our shortstop, Kyle Edwards, is a phenomenal shortstop. He made an error this weekend. Their shortstop, Kobe Lunsford, great ball player. Really glad I got a chance to watch him play. Great shortstop. He made an error too. The best guys are going to make errors. Put the ball in play. Something good's going
to
happen.
Yeah, and it just goes to highlight of, if you're not playing your best every game on a weekend series, teams are going to beat you. Like, that is going to happen. They made one or two more plays than us. Mm-hmm. They took advantage of an opportunity when they got guys in scoring position there later in the 11th inning. We were able to get that run to go ahead. And that's just kind of the way things fell. I mean, I thought Blake pitched pretty well. He had a little rough go of it there, I think, in the fourth. Like, Ben Moore pitched well, Jacob Gomez, and then Kellen Davis and Lincoln Ransom to kind of shut it down. Nothing too bad from the pitching standpoint. I mean, you didn't give up that many runs. You have 5 runs in an 11-inning game. I'll take that from college baseball on a Saturday all day. But that's a game that I think, missing those opportunities, we're going to be kicking ourselves, because it really makes it more difficult for us to get an at-large bid because of ULM's RPI and how that drags us down. We're going to need to probably do some really good work in these final series and these final games, and there's no more margin for error if we want to try to get an at-large. Otherwise, you're going to have to do the really, really tough thing, and that's win the Sun Belt Tournament, which that is going to be a gauntlet to just get to the finals there.
I'll be honest, the idea of us getting an at-large has maybe, in my mind, kind of been gone for a minute. But you're right. You definitely can go on a run here at the end. And I think for that to happen, you're going to have to play really, really well these last couple weeks. If not win every single game, then win just about every single game. And really, you probably got to play in the championship in the Sun Belt. At the very least, be in the game and maybe beat a couple of those teams at the end to have that chance for at large. This is really one of those years. Like, if you want to go play in the NCAA tournament, which I hope every single guy on the team does, you got to go win that tournament. So we really got to have that focus. And again, you can't think of that terms. You got to think every single pitch. Just think about every pitch. Think about every at bat. Just think about today. I still think it can happen. But you're right. The road is tough, and it just comes down to, there have been some games here and there that we've given away. The approach is getting better. The at bats are getting better. I feel like we're getting there and peaking at the right time. But it's going to take a lot at the end here.
Yeah, I think I was doing some quick RPI math, and something along the lines of 7-2 over our final 9 conference games. Mm-hmm. Got to beat VCU. Got to beat Richmond in the last non-conference games. We also are probably going to need teams like UVA and East Carolina to continue kicking ass and staying really high, because we have wins over those teams. A little bit of a run in the Sun Belt tournament. But that's a very difficult road. So is winning the conference tournament. But there's definitely some negativity from losing a game you probably should have won against ULM at home. But it can't overshadow the fact that we've now won 3 straight conference series. We definitely look like a better team now. We have, I think, been a better team since that UVA victory at Harbor Park. Like, that seemed to snap things back into perspective and get these guys rolling. So still a lot of positives, still a lot of things to look forward to, but it's a little bit tighter from that at-large standpoint now. And we would have swept, we might be saying a very different story about those at-large chances, at least, you know, looking forward.
If we would have swept, I mean, you look at, I think right now we're tied for 6th in the conference, and really we're 7 because James Madison, or Coastal Carolina, has a tiebreaker over. If you were 12-9, you'd be up there tied for 3rd, right? So it's just a different feeling, a different perspective. So, you know, that's just how it goes. We, at the end of the day, they lost the game on Saturday. That's what happens. You got to move forward, like I said, win those games you got left, and see where things finish out at the end of the year, and go and just keep, just focus on this at bat, focus on this pitch.
Since we're on the topic of the Sun Belt, before we talk about that final game on Sunday, the Sun Belt had a very weird weekend. Mm-hmm. You had Troy go to Coastal Carolina and sweep them, and then call them beach chickens on social media, which I found very
funny. It's a better nickname than Chanticleers. Frankly, if they were the Coastal Carolina beach chickens, I would find that more enjoyable than their silly name they already have.
You go talk to Troy. I know we've called them the beach chickens in football a couple times too. uh, But so you get a road sweep, Troy over Coastal, and then App State goes into Atlanta, plays Georgia State, and sweeps them, which is, again, very odd to get two road sweeps in one weekend for the Sun Belt. Southern Miss swept Marshall, South Alabama beat JMU, and Louisiana beat Southern Miss. So it's still kind of a log jam there for those top 10 spots. But I've seen some separation now. Like Marshall is 6-15. Arkansas State is 6-14-1. They're effectively out of the race and likely not going to make the Sun Belt tournament unless something really crazy happens for them. But man, you've got, what is it, three teams at 11-10. It's us, Madison, Coastal, and then App State is 11-9-1. So they're effectively 11-10. And then you bump up from that and you've got Georgia Southern and Southern Miss at 12-9. So, you know, one game here and all of a sudden you're the number three seed. But you go the other way on that and all of a sudden you're fighting for that 9-10, going to be in that single elimination side of the Sun Belt tournament. So a lot still up for grabs. Really, really important series at Texas State over the weekend because they're 8-13. Be amazing to get a road sweep, kind of like the way Troy and App State did over the weekend. But a lot of room for movement in that Sun Belt. It is still going to be a fight right down to that final weekend.
It's extremely hard to sweep a series. It's extremely hard to win a series on the road. It's almost impossible to sweep a series on the road. But as you saw, a couple teams did this weekend. So ODU really needs to go down to wherever San Marcos is, outside of Austin, I hear, and just take on those. They're Bobcats. I had to look all this up. They're the Bobcats and beat them. That's really just go in again, take that mindset one pitch at a time, realize how good this team really is. We have an ERA as a team, 3.97. A sub 4 ERA as a team in college is not easy.
No, it is not. Anytime you're getting that sub 4, you're doing something special. Let's talk a little bit about the game on Sunday because that was a fun game to be at. And if you were there at the Bud bright and early at 10:30, with your beers and burgers and brunch and whatever else you had going on, it was a good ball game. And then it was a really fun ball game at the end for ODU fans. We opened up the scoring in the first, putting up a 5 spot in that top, in that bottom of the first inning. Tyser had an RBI single. We had Waters scoring on a wild pitch. Kenny Lavari hit the first, or I guess should say the least impressive of his 2 home runs on Sunday with a 2-run bomb. And then Bryce Jones caps it off, which I'm surprised he didn't get the RBI on, but it did bring a run in. It was a single out there to left with runners scoring position. So 5-0 right out the gate, and we're loving this first thing in the morning on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, what a wonderful – there are definitely more people by the end of the game than there were at the start of the game, that's for sure. But, yeah, what a great way to start the day. Just everything clicking, and it felt like, okay, we're just going to – we're going to come out. We're definitely going to score, get a 10-run rule, get a mercy rule this thing. Hey, we might even get 15 and just get this thing done in 5 innings, right?
That's where my mind was. But ULM had other ideas. Yeah. They still saw the opportunity where they could possibly go and win this series. And they exploded for 5 runs of their own in the third. And that was a really tough inning. That inning was a long, long inning with a couple of pitching changes. And just everything seemed to be working for ULM. And you know, we've seen Coach Finwood be able to push all the right buttons with pitching changes and kind of having that quick hook on guys to go to some of the other depth in the bullpen. This is one of the times that having that quick hook actually hurt us a little bit, and we weren't able to get those things to go our way like we had for so long.
Yeah, Stephen Trone has been doing great work out of the bullpen. We mentioned him in the Tuesday game, did great. He's been a guy. It seems to me like Kellen Davis has pitched well. I think he's maybe getting a little tired as the season goes on, you know, pitching in, if not every game, maybe 3 out of 4 or 2 out of 4. So I was thinking maybe Stephen Trone needs to be getting some of his opportunities, put him in this situation. He just did not have his stuff. And so he kind of let Dylan Brown's run get in. He had some guys on. Then Trent Buchanan came out. Trent really didn't have that inning either. It really, like you said, it just kind of getting through that inning, it took a lot. After that, Trent locked in and pitched great. And then Ben Moore came out for the final, what was the final inning, and it was outstanding. Getting through that inning was a slog. That thing took a long time.
I was a little surprised for the quick hook on Dylan because he had pitched very well up until that point. He had 2 very good innings. He had 4 strikeouts at that point in the third. So I I would have liked to seen Dylan Brown get the chance to work through that inning after giving up a leadoff double. You know, he probably is not going to finish that inning if they start getting some runs, but see if he can get one, two more outs, because like you said, Stephen Trone came in, just didn't have his best stuff, and that forced them to go to the pen again to bring in Trent Buchanan mid-inning, when I think we've seen him do very well starting an inning, similar to Hollabetz on a Friday where, okay, if we need to bring in Kellen to get a final out of an inning to bridge it and then let John come in and start an inning. I think a similar thing is true for Trent Buchanan, because after that third inning when he came in and finally was able to get out of it, he was fantastic the rest of the day. So just kind of pressing those buttons didn't quite work out for us that time, but I don't want to say it was a bad call or bad decision or anything, because that has been a recipe for success for us so far this season.
Yeah, sometimes you press the button and the thing doesn't do what you want it to do. I think we all experience that every day, and all the buttons we press in different places. It doesn't mean that the process was it's worked pretty well, and it just didn't work as great in that inning. Dylan Brown's a guy that, you know, he is extremely talented. He is a very, very good pitcher. I mean, just looking here, his strikeout numbers are ridiculous. He's got 43 strikeouts and 33 and two-thirds innings. I mean, he has an electric arm. He just, it's like we don't give him enough chances to work through things. I think last week he got pulled in the second inning. This week got pulled in the third inning. I really, you know, we're at the point now, you know, Dylan, he's a sophomore. It'd be really nice to see him just be a guy that could take a big jump and become like a legit weekend arm next season. I don't know what needs to happen for that to happen. It's just there's a ton of ability there that, whether it's we're not giving the chances to work through things, and sometimes you got, as a pitcher, you got to fail. Sometimes you have to go out and have a lack of success and figure out how to work through it. Dylan's again, also just an amazing kid, a great, great guy. And I would love to see that raw talent turn into on-field success in a way that so far it just hasn't quite happened.
Yeah. And he has struggled this year, like you pointed out. But he was good on Sunday, and I would just like to see him get one, two more batters in that situation, especially since we're coming off of two extra inning games, mm-hmm. and maybe for the first time this season, we don't have as fresh of arms in the bullpen, especially using, you know, Jacob on Saturday. But at the end of the day, it didn't really matter because the offense just exploded later in that game. No run, I think, was more important than in after giving up those five runs at the top of the third. The absolutely nuclear bomb that Kenny Lavari hit over the scoreboard and right.
Good.
478 feet on TrackMan. I don't think they've ever seen that on TrackMan before.
They said it was 112 miles an hour off the bat, which is one of the harder ones we've had all year. I mean, that was, I would say it was one of the longest home runs I've ever seen hit at the bud, but I didn't even bother to see where it went because I was taking pictures. I was just watching Kenny watch the ball because that was one where, like, well, that ball is gone. There's no point even looking. That ball is so far beyond the wall, it's never, ever coming back.
I mean, I was in Rally Alley, and you could hear the necks cracking going left to right watching that thing leave the yard. It was still climbing when it cleared the scoreboard, and that takes some power. I know that on Kenny's first home run of the day, there was a little bit of chirping going around the bases. I don't think Kenny started that. I think that were some guys in the field chirping him. But the catcher for Louisiana Monroe was definitely there to make sure that Kenny hustled down to first base. And after he spent half a second looking at it, he was chirping him and barking at him as he was going to first. And Kenny just smiled and watched that thing continue to sail as he was trotting to first base. So they got their panties in a bunch a little bit about the absolute missile that came off of his bat.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, frankly, we're past that, aren't we, in baseball? I mean, yeah, that was the thing for years and years and all. It's like, you know what, man, it is 2024. It's hard to hit home run. If you hit one, you hit a nuke. I mean, just an absolute bomb shot off of somebody. If you want to take a second to watch, frankly, I'd have done the Jose Bautista bat flip, had that thing going 35 feet in the air. Like, that is one of the most majestic home runs you'll ever see. I'm sorry it happened against you, buddy. That's a tough time. You can cry about it on the bus ride home. Let the guys have fun, man. Baseball is so much more fun now the guys are celebrating some and having a good time.
Like, he did not bat flip. He was walking to first, maybe took half a second to look. It was nothing even remotely exaggerated to celebrate it. Never looked at the pitcher, never looked at the visiting dugout. I mean, a very muted celebration for one of the longest home runs that's been hit in that ballpark. So I don't know why they were so upset. Maybe because they knew that that was going to be curtains for them because the boys just kept piling runs on the rest of the game.
I mean, it was one of those ones, I guess, if you have known Kenny for the last several years, you might be like, wow, that was really expressive for Kenny. For anybody else, you'd be like, okay, he looked at it for a second and ran.
Yeah. And that was just the exclamation point on an amazing day from Kenny. And then we're going to talk about his full stats here in a little bit, but drove in 5 runs, went 4 for 5. Have yourself a day, Kenny.
2 homers, a double, 5 ribbies. Maverick Stallings had a great day with 3 hits and a walk. Kyle Edwards, 3 hits, 2 RBIs, 2 doubles for Kyle and 2 stolen bases. So just some outstanding. Hunter Cole came in late, got himself a nice double. Stephen Meyer got a nice double. Yeah, they piled on 5 more runs there in the bottom of the 8th. Got a walk-off to get that mercy rule, which, you know, I think you pointed it out. The guy, you could really see the guys once we scored a couple of runs. I think we got to 3, and all of a sudden it was like, no, we're definitely getting these 2 more runs and finishing this game.
Kenny hit the 2-run single in the 8th inning to make it 12-5, and the guys smelled blood in the water. And I love seeing that of go for the throat, put this team away now. Let's end this thing while we're batting. And you saw Stephen Meyer, who actually didn't start the game, came in later in center field, hits an RBI double. Aiken gets a nice RBI ground out. And then Kyle Edwards finishes the game, doubling off the wall and left, scores Stephen Meyer's 15-5 curtains. And we're all out in time to pretty much have a full day after the 10:30 a.m. start.
I think I mentioned this to you. I said they called my bluff on it. They I said in the last podcast that the tennis started a little too early for me at 10 a.m. And so the baseball made the game at 10:30 just to say, okay, we won't do 10. That's fine. And speaking of tennis, I see it on your face. Speaking of tennis, how about the ODU women's tennis winning the Sun Belt tournament? Second year in a row winning the Sun Belt tournament. Fourth year in a row winning the conference tournament. That is a level of dominance that every single one of our sports teams would aspire to. What a program. Tennis school.
Just amazing. And it wasn't even close. No. I mean, they basically sleptwalked through that tournament. They beat the brakes off everybody. They're going to do some damage in the NCAA tournament. I think their selection show is today or tonight or something. You'll be able to see all that info. ODU Monarch is social media. We'll make sure we get that. Of course, the ODU men's tennis and women's tennis social media accounts will have it out as well. But I have always said I like supporting winners and winning programs. And I don't know if there's a better example of that right now at ODU than tennis. So I will be wearing my tennis school shirt. And that makes you mad, then go win some conference tournaments and we'll make one for you too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why anybody'd be mad at celebrating greatness. It's phenomenal. They've been so good.
Yeah, absolutely. So kudos to that program. Excited to watch them in the NCAA tournament as they go forward there. But wrapping up the weekend, interesting kind of stat, and I know you've got some stats you're going to talk about with some of our guys, but Louisiana Monroe scored 11 runs on us over the 3 games this weekend. 9 of those runs occurred in 2 innings. We had the 5-run inning in the 3rd on Sunday. They scored 4 in the 4th on Saturday. So outside of those 2 innings, we gave up 2 runs, and only one of those was earned. So just want to shout out our pitching staff. I know we love talking about the home runs and the doubles and the small ball and putting up all those big numbers. Our pitching staff is fantastic. They are consistent. They are everything you could ask for in a pitching staff at this point in the season to be getting outs the way they are.
You know, I was talking to our pitching coach, Mike Maron, this week, and I told him, I said, I was joking with him. I said, well, they're making you look good. But I told him, I said, the reality is, if it wasn't for the pitching staff being that good this season, this would not be a good team. The reality is the hitting has not been consistent enough. Now, again, we're moving in the right direction. So we're moving the right way when things are getting tough here at the end. So you love to see that. But if you took out, if you just made this a mediocre pitching staff, you know, if you just made like a 4.5 ERA or almost 5 ERA pitching staff, this team would have a well under 500. We'd be 10 games under 500. So the fact that we are above 500, both for the season and in the conference, and we're here, you know, with 9 conference games left, have a good shot at being a higher seed in the tournament. as long as we go out and take care of business because of this pitching staff. And so it's a testament to the work those guys are putting in, a testament to what Mike Maron's doing with them, John Keane working with them, what Nick Murray, who was our director of operations, what he was doing before he left to take a job with the Red Sox. It's a testament to what these guys have done that this team has been able to compete at the level it's been able to compete at.
They are 11th nationally with a 3.97 ERA. The teams above them, you have Oregon State. Louisiana is there. The Raging Cajuns, they're at 3.85. But A&M, Tennessee, Arizona, Dallas Baptist, East Carolina, Arkansas, Lamar, really good baseball programs. And we are right there with them in terms of team ERA. So kudos to the pitching staff. CB, I know you've got some awesome batting stats for Kyle and Kenny over the past
week. Well, yeah, so let's talk about so as we throw out all the wonderful pitching. But Kenny Lavari, you realize this apparently. I didn't realize this. Kenny Lavari is on a 14-game hitting streak. I did not know that. So over the weekend, he was 8 for 20. 8 for 20, which is a .400 batting average. 8 for 20, 3 doubles, 2 homers, 8 RBIs in the weekend. So that's a heck of a weekend. During this 14-game stretch, he has gone 21 for 58, which is a .362 average. He's got 7 doubles, 4 homers, 15 RBIs in that stretch. So he's hitting .362, .422 on base, .621 slugging for a 1,043 OPS. He's raised his batting average 30 points. That is not easy to do. I mean, basically, since April 6th, he's had this hitting streak. When you get into April in the college season, you're an everyday player. So you've basically played like a month and a half, maybe it might have been 2 months almost at that point. To raise your batting average 30 points is crazy. And I know he dug himself a big hole. He was, I think at one point I looked at it, it was about March 8th, he was hitting .133. And he's got himself up. He's up to hit .282 now. He's the second highest batter on the team.
He said on the podcast he was off to the worst start of his collegiate career. Yeah. And boy, has he turned that around.
Yeah. What a stretch. I mean, it's great to see. Again, couldn't happen to a better guy. And all that while playing phenomenal defense at third base every day, too. And then Kyle Edwards had a great weekend. Kyle, his bat's been kind of up and down, but this weekend, man, it was up. He was 9 for 22 on the weekend, which is a .409 average. He had 4 doubles and 3 stolen bases. So that's just a couple of guys. I had a few minutes to actually pull some numbers. I used to love doing numbers all the time, but I never have time to go out and dig through them. So way to go, Kenny and Kyle, kind of pacing the things this weekend.
I'm not saying it's because those guys came on the podcast, but Kenny started hitting after he did. And then Kyle was our guest last week. He had an amazing week. I believe we have similar results for Luke Waters and Jay Cassaday and a couple other guys. So maybe we're the good luck charm. Like maybe that's the only tiny little sliver of credit we should get in this mix.
I mean, so all the guys that are already like kind of sad, we don't ask them to come on or be more sad. Is that what you're saying? Because now we're the ones preventing them from greatness.
I just think we need to get more guys on. I mean, we will see what happens because TJ Akin is our guest this week. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, you will hear from TJ all about the weekend, his recruiting story, and plenty of other things. So thank you so much for listening and stay tuned.
This episode of the Monarchist Podcast is brought to you by the Pride of ODU Collective. Their mission is to elevate the experience of student athletes through name, image, and likeness, while also elevating the fan experience. If you or your business are interested in getting involved, you can reach out to us directly or go over to theprideofodu.com. That is theprideofodu.com. Thank you for listening, and go Monarchs.
Hello, Monarch fans, and welcome to the Hudson Homers podcast. We are joined today by TJ Akin of ODU Baseball. He's been our starting left fielder for a couple of games now. But TJ, thanks so much for hopping on with us today.
Yes, sir. No doubt. Always a pleasure.
Well, TJ, coming off of a really good week, going 3-1, beating our biggest rival, VCU, and then taking 2 out of 3 to win the third consecutive Sun Belt Series. How are the guys feeling today over at the Lift?
I think everybody was feeling pretty good. Everybody's amped up, ready to play again this weekend. We do not have a midweek this week, but I think it's kind of good giving everybody's bodies a break and just getting ready for the weekend and getting ready to roll again.
Yeah, that was some veteran scheduling on Finney's part by having a week off this week. That's pretty solid. I bet y'all, I mean, especially you, like it's your first college year. How are you feeling this time of year?
Oh, my body is probably the most beat up it's ever been. But I think that's just getting adjusted to college baseball from just a transition from high school to college, really. I think that's really all it is, honestly. But I think everything's going to be fine. Body feels okay. Just got to go to the training room, hang out in there for a little bit, get some treatment, and everything will be all right. I think that's everybody, though, around this time of year, not just our team, but every team.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're talking about transition from high school ball to college ball. What's been the big things for you? What's been the thing where you're like, okay, I didn't realize that until I got here?
I would say probably the pitching, the velo difference, and actually having I feel like you can't just really just sit fastball. Of course you can't just sit fastball, but mainly in high school, like as a high school player, you just majority of the time you're getting a fastball. But I think just making that transition to be able to adjust to off-speed pitching more often than you had to in high school.
How was your regular season high school level of play? Because I know sometimes I see guys and it's like the high school games are just kind of like, man, you're just really out there like a man amongst boys and it's not it's really travel ball. Was that kind of the case or no. Was your high school ball? No, he said, okay, so no.
South Carolina ball is tough, especially in 4A and 5A. That's probably closest you can get to at least most JUCOs. I mean, I'm not just trying to compare high school to JUCO, but you got some good level pitching and some very good level hitters. I mean, like, played against Cam Cantarella, Carson Messina, Cole Messina, Tristan Smith, just guys that are complete ballers in South Carolina. I mean, it's a lot of good players in South Carolina, especially in that 4A and 5A range. It's good competition.
You were talking about you had a couple of friends that play for East Carolina, Clemson, South Carolina, and those are all really good programs, especially East Carolina and South Carolina. What was it like playing with those guys and like what info are you getting from them about their season and what info are you sharing back of kind of like tips and tricks that you've learned as you kind of all come in as freshmen and sophomores?
I mean, it's pretty cool playing with just being able to create connections with everybody around the states, the Southeast, really. I mean, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia. I mean, it's always cool to have friends out there to know what they're going through, know what they're learning, know what they're experiencing as well. Just really, I think for the most part, I feel like it's been a grind for everybody, like me, myself, my friends at ECU, Kobe Wallace, some of my friends at Clemson, Devin Parks, Xavier Pelzer from South Carolina. They said it's always been a grind and just I feel like it's just a learning experience for everybody. That's the main thing, really, and just getting adjusted to college baseball.
I talked to Coach Fenwood after the game on Sunday and actually asked him about you. Just because of the success you've had and the way you've worked yourself into the lineup. And he talked about fielding and you making the transition from playing a whole lot of center field to now primarily playing in left field and how the ball flies different, how you have to read it differently. Can you kind of take us through what the differences are between playing center field and left field that maybe your average fan is not going
to
pick up
on? Yeah, okay. So to me, I feel like it's always a big difference from center field and left field because different batters, for example, left-handed hitter, it would be like, say they hit a ball in left field, high pop-up, but it's going to flare a different direction than it would, say, in center field or right field. So, like, if it's coming off a left-handed batter's bat, it's going to flare to the left side, and I'm always being used to it flaring to the right side or straight up or straight down. I've never been used to it flaring to the left side and like during the fall and spring before we started playing it, I really struggled with it because I will always open my left shoulder up because I'm facing the plate. I always open my left shoulder up instead of opening up my right shoulder to go catch the ball. So I have to spin my head really fast and I would miss it every single time. And it made me feel awful. Like I never knew how to play outfield before. So it was basically just starting all over for me again, learning how to play outfield. From that aspect, but I feel like I've gotten used to it. I've grown, and it's become a lot easier.
That's got to be tough for you because you're a great athlete. You're a really good outfielder, so that had to be tough to go out there and suck at something for a little while.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's like it just hurt for a little while. I mean, it wasn't nothing crazy, but I just feel like it was worth learning though because I want to be able to play all three in outfield and. That's one I've never played. I've always played center field from the time I started playing baseball to until now.
How did it feel getting out there yesterday on Sunday, getting to play center field? And you made a great play.
Yeah. It's amazing. I feel like center field, it's like just because of my speed, it's just easy to cover ground. I feel like playing center field is more like you're just free. Like playing the corner, I feel like playing the corners is hard as well, but I feel like for me, it's easier to play center field because I can play free. I can run how I want. I don't have to flip my head as much. Just run all over, however I want to run.
Well, you started the year kind of coming into the game at different points, getting some pinch hit opportunities, and now you've kind of established yourself as a left fielder, which is a position that we've desperately been looking for someone to say, like, all right, that is mine. I'm going to go and take it. Can you tell us a little bit about that transition from having to always be ready to go kind of on the bench for pinch run, pinch hit, defense, whatever it is, to now like, okay, I'm probably going to be in the leadoff spot. I know I'm playing today. Like mentally, how does your mindset change between those kind of two functions?
I feel like your mindset really doesn't change. I mean, I feel like you got to be ready to play at any given moment. Like you said, during the pinch hit at bats and stuff, just being ready to play any given moment, knowing you're probably going in like in the seventh or eighth. I feel like I needed that to like as a develop, like mentally development, and just knowing that you're not always going to be the guy. You're not always going to be the best player on the field. You're not always going to start. And I feel like that made me work harder than I did before. But the transition from pinch hitting and stuff to starting is, I would say, just the mental focus of being locked in the whole game instead of just for three innings. Like being locked in for every at bat, every situation, knowing what's going on at all times, just stuff like that. I feel like that's the big difference. And just being able to, I think hitting the leadoff spot, especially just being able to relay information from your bat, your first at bat of the game, to everybody else on the starting pitcher. Because I feel like that gets overlooked a lot, but that's really what the success of the team comes from, being able to relay information from one player to another.
So I actually, I had a minute here, so I figured out your stats here for your last 11 games. I don't know if you know or if you don't want to hear, sorry. But so about last 11 games, about since TJ's been playing left field most every day, 12 for 40, which is a .300 batting average. You got 6 RBIs, double, triple, home run in that span, 7 walks, a hit by pitch. So we're talking about a .300 average, .417 on base, .450 slugging, so .867 OPS. Not too bad for a freshman.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
And you would have had probably another home run on Saturday, but early in that game, the wind was blowing back in, and you basically put like a pitching wedge shot that dug right into the bottom of the wall in right center, and you got that triple. Obviously, the hit itself and the contact you made was great, but the fact that you were in an 0-2 count for that and were able to square one up to start the game and get that going, I thought that was really impressive, especially from a freshman to hit a ball like that 0-2 to lead off a game.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I thought it was going to be gone because I think if you looked at the video on ESPN, like I was jogging around. I think I was jogging like halfway to second base, and then I just like flipped the switch and just turned it on to get to third.
So what I'm hearing is you could have had an inside the park home run out of this.
I don't know if it could have been inside the park home run, but
that was a long pause. I'm just saying that that was you. Okay, all right.
Yeah, that inside the park home run might be kind of pushing it.
It might be. All right. So you're from, so you say you're from South Carolina. You're from Greenwood. I was getting confused. I can't think it was Greenville, which I looked at the map, not the same place at all. You're kind of in between. You're kind of in the middle of nowhere, honestly, there, right? It's kind of between like Greenville and Columbia and Augusta. But so how do you go from Greenwood, South Carolina, to being at Old Dominion, Norfolk, Virginia?
Well, just I didn't really get on the travel ball circuit until like really the end of my freshman year. I started playing with the South Charlotte Panthers. We were from the time I was there to the time I stopped playing, which was after I broke my thumb, to like the end of my season, my 7-2 season for them. But I think we were ranked the 5th ranked team in the country for like the last 3 years that I was playing. And so we had a lot of exposure to our team. Walker Jenkins was on our team, the 5th overall draft pick this past year's draft. He went 5th overall. I think he went 5th or 4th to the Twins. But a lot of scouts every game. A lot of exposure. We played in Fort Myers, Atlanta, all the big tournaments you can think of. But Logan recruited me. Logan Robbins, the old hitting coach, he recruited me. And it was after I decommitted from the College of Charleston, after my sophomore year, and just stayed in touch with him and came on a visit. And I loved it. And from there, it's history.
I love that. Well, don't convince you to go to Notre Dame. You stay here.
Yeah, I will, no doubt.
Well, we're glad that you ended up here at ODU. Whatever path brought you here, it's been fun to watch you play. But just curious, we know there's a lot of baseball houses kind of right there near the ballpark. We're at some of them for like pregame tailgates. But who's in your house? Who have you gotten to know? Is there anybody that you've gotten especially close with since you've come to ODU last year?
I would say like, so there's like a house like right across the street from us, like with Brandon Pine, Bryce, Vincent Becerra, all of them. I feel like during this, like I came in last summer and like after weights and on field hitting and stuff during the summer, we would go to the beach every day or get on the water. Just stuff I like to do because in Greenwood, we got a lake called Lake Greenwood. It's just, I go to the lake almost every single day during the summer and I like being on the water and just bonding out there, doing stuff like that. And that's just how I bonded with them and creating a good friendship, especially with Brandon. It's pretty cool just because background, stuff we've been through, stuff like that. I mean, just made me and connect more on a deeper level than I thought I could connect with anybody. I mean, it was pretty cool. And I think he's probably one of my closest friends on the team.
Awesome. And who else lives in the house there with you now?
Oh, me, Tice, Boo and Luke. And Boo and Luke, they were here during the summer too, and they welcomed me with open arms, and just being able to learn from them and grow with them and become friends with them was also helped me develop as a player and as a person as well.
You got a house with some power hitters in it there.
Yeah.
So just hearing kind of socially hanging out with so many of the older guys, do you think that maybe had some help and impact on what's allowed you to have some success here as a freshman?
Yeah, I think so. Just hearing from them and learning from them and seeing how they go about their at-bats and stuff has helped me. I think that has helped me a lot.
All right. We've asked everyone who's come on the podcast so far this question. We're getting the college football video game back at some point this summer. We're hoping that that eventually leads to the college baseball game coming back. You're probably too young to even play that game.
I played all of them. I played 12, 13, and 14. I didn't get to play 11. But I bought all the old games because I broke my disc for NCAA 14. And it's probably like, I forgot how old I was. Maybe like 9. I was like 9 when NCAA 14 was out. And I played it every day with my dad. And every time he beat me, I would cry. And then my disc broke. And when my disc broke for that game, I thought it was the end of the world. So after that, wow. I think me and my dad went to GameStop in Greenwood right beside Lowe's and bought NCAA 13 and 12 just so I can do like the Road to Glory and stuff like that and play him, which I eventually started beating him in. So I wasn't crying anymore. So
had to toughen you up a little bit on that. I'll tell you, I still have the Xbox 360. I still have NCAA 14. I don't know how many national titles I've won with Old Dominion at this point, but at 30 years, it cuts you off. I don't know if you knew that, but that's how long the dynasties ago. I mean, it's been out for, I got that game, I don't know, I think it was in college or just after college. So
you could literally have fictional video game characters, children playing on your college team. That's how long you were playing that thing.
Could have grandkids on there. But TJ, the question for you, if they come out with a college baseball game again, what is going to be your overall rating? Where are you going to spike?
I think my overall would probably be like 80, 81.
Okay.
I'm going to keep it cool. But I think the speed would be up there. Speed more than anything would be up there. In my rating.
Yeah, would you just dominate your teammates?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Because I'm good at MLB show.
Okay, you get hitting the perfect perfects and all that?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I just really enjoy getting to sit here and talk to you, TJ. You know, you've been a good kid. It's hard to come in, I think, as a freshman and really make an impact. You know, it's not always easy, but it's been a joy watching you, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, TJ, we really appreciate you taking a couple minutes to chat with us and give us your insight. It was great chatting with you, great watching you, and safe travels out to San Marcos, Texas, and good luck this weekend.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Thank y'all.
Yeah, thanks, TJ.
Welcome back to the Hudson Homers podcast, Monarch fans. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with TJ Akin. We definitely did. Love seeing him as kind of that everyday left fielder in his development. Just an awesome kid.
Yeah, great guy. I told him a few weeks ago, I said, hey, man, left field's yours. Just keep taking it. And he hasn't missed a beat. I gave you the numbers there. Since he's been able to get in the lineup, he's been doing exactly what you need. It's been a nice spark. He's been very good at the top of the lineup. I know he's got a good level of confidence for a young kid. That's what you want to see out of a hitter.
Absolutely. And we're going to need that. And we're going to need him doing well in the leadoff spot this weekend as we head all the way over to San Marcos, Texas, the longest road trip in the Sun Belt, giving me some Conference USA PTSD here, but going to play the Bobcats. And San Marcos is kind of in between Austin and San Antonio. So you've got good barbecue if you go east. You have good tacos and Mexican food, Tex-Mex, if you go west. It's actually in a pretty good spot. They draw fans very, very well. They usually have a great student turnout for their games. I know I've watched some of their games on ESPN+. Typically, when they play teams like Texas, Texas A&M, they get pretty rowdy. So I would anticipate seeing some good crowds out there, even though they have definitely not had the season that they wanted to. They're 22-23. They're 8-11 in the Sun Belt. Then they are coming off of dropping 2 out of 3 to the last place team in conference or in the Sun Belt, Arkansas State. They dropped the opener 5-4. They actually played 2 on Friday. They dropped the second game of that doubleheader 8-7 in extra innings. They were able to bounce back for the final game and somehow won that thing 10-0, and it ended in 7 innings, but been a struggle for them this season. I would say their highlight is probably when they were able to go to Texas over in Austin and get the win there. But a team that I think we need to go down and kind of put them out of their misery in terms of their hopes and dreams for the Sun Belt this year.
Yeah, I mean, much the same way we realistically probably should have swept this past weekend against ULM. Really probably should have gone to Marshall and swept them. Really should go down to Texas State and sweep them again. Winning a series on the road in the conference is hard. Sweeping is extremely hard, but ODU is a much better team than Texas State. And frankly, the goal should be to go down and win all three, because that would really set ODU up really well for the rest of the season. And it seems like an accomplishable goal.
And no midweek this week for ODU, but Texas State does have one. They're going to head west and go take on the Meat Meeps in San Antonio. So they will play one midweek game this week. But want to take a look at a couple of their players. They do have some dudes that can hit in this lineup. They don't have as many guys above 300 as Louisiana Monroe, but they definitely have some bats. Cameron Wheel or Well, it's W-E-I-L. Not sure how you pronounce it, so apologize if that's incorrect.
But speaking of, we were correct about Michelle on ULM. It was Michelle. So we were right about that. Maybe you're right about Wheel.
I mean, we'll see. If I went 1-for-1 last weekend, I'm definitely going 0-for this weekend, so don't worry about that. But Cameron's hitting 327, 804 OPS, no home runs. He's got 13 RBIs. 7-for-11 on stolen base attempts. So definitely seems like the guy who is getting on and letting some other guys get him in. The big home run threat is Aaron Lugo. He's got 9 bombs, 33 RBIs. Daylen Pena, 7 home runs, 39 ribbies. And then Ryan Farber, he's only played in 29 games for them, but he's hitting 398 with a 1.072 OPS. And he's doing that with only 2 home runs. So he is a doubles machine when he's getting his at bats. So guys in the lineup, they can absolutely hit. They have a lot of guys on their team with stolen bases, similar to what ODU's stat sheet looks like. As a team, though, they've only hit 43 home runs this season, so they're not a big home run threat. But they do have 75 doubles. So they are gappers and down the line hitting team.
Yeah, and we know even the teams that aren't as good can win any game. I mean, here, I'm actually looking at Texas State. They run rule, Arkansas State the last day there, and all the guys you just mentioned had hits and had big days. And Drayton Brown threw a complete game, 7-inning shutout. So it's, you know, even the teams that are at the bottom can have really great days, and they're there for a reason. They're good ball players.
Yeah, and they do have some arms as well. Not too much in terms of impressive ERAs. We talked about Drayton Brown. He's got a 3.19 ERA in 8 starts this season. He's got 12 total appearances. That's pretty damn solid stat line. Sam Hall and Austin Eaton, I believe, are their other primary starters. They do tend to mix it up, it looks like, a little bit with who starts for them. And then coming out of the bullpen is Dalton Buckingham. He's only thrown 8 2/3 innings, but he's got 1.04 ERA. And then Jonathan Martinez, he's thrown 28 innings, got a 2.22 ERA. So I would not say that they are as deep as us with their pitching, but as we've seen with teams like Marshall and ULM, when we struggle on those Fridays facing their top line starters, we tend to lose those games. So I would love to see us jump on this team early on Friday, set the tone for the weekend, and come away with that series opening victory, and hopefully do it, you know, in 7, 8, or 9 innings, not the 12 inning fun that we had on Friday in Norfolk.
Yeah, as much as I enjoy baseball, I'm good with it just being 9 innings. I mean, I like a win. If it takes a little longer to win, that's fine. I do see a few other Texas State. There's a reliever here, Rhett McCafferty. He's got 20 innings, 29 strikeouts, a 3.60 ERA. And there's another kid here, Peyton Zabel. Looks like 21 2/3 innings, 30 strikeouts. Now, he's got a 6-something ERA, but that's a couple of guys. You know, when you have those kind of strikeout numbers, it means you've got a pretty good arm, and maybe you gave up some runs here or there, but those are the kind of guys who can come in and do some damage.
Yeah, and we're going to get their best shot because they realize that they're kind of fighting to get into the tournament here. They're trying to get at least to 10 so they can get in that kind of single elimination first round that happens in the Sun Belt tournament. They would love to get above it, but it's going to be hard sitting at 8-13, as competitive as the conference is, and only 9 games left. So you're going to get their best shot at home. They're not going to make it easy. And boys just got to show up and play. I want to see more of what we saw on Sunday in those innings. We're just stacking runs than what we saw on Saturday of missing opportunities.
Yeah, Marshall and Arkansas State with only 6 wins, they're pretty much out of contention. But ULM and Texas State with 7-8 wins, they're, you know, yeah, 7-14, 8-13, not looking great. But a good weekend, and you turn that into 3 good weekends, and all of a sudden things are just fine for them. So we definitely want to go down there and just put a nail in their coffin.
And how the Sun Belt tournament works, I finally got some clarity because there were a couple different things floating out there. But the top 10 teams make the Sun Belt Conference tournament. 7 through 10 play a single elimination round to get us down to 8 teams, and then the double elimination piece starts. So you do not want to be the 7 seed, because you're going to have to play in a single elimination game to just stay alive down there. You want to get in the top 6, preferably in the top 3, to get your path a little bit easier. ODU still has the ability, I think, to get to 3, possibly 2, depending on what Troy does. But one bad weekend, and you're all of a sudden find yourself fighting for that 10 spot because of how tight those standings are.
And guess what number ODU would be if they ended the day?
What are we, 7?
We'd be 7, yes. So that just shows right there the urgency. These guys got to, you know, obviously our guys go and take it seriously every week. We got to understand, like, you got to lock in. Again, like I keep saying, every pitch, every at-bat, make it your best one. Because, you know, like I said, you do not want to play a single elimination game. You really don't. If nothing else, just one more game. You got to expend arms, expend energy, and go out and fight hard. It makes it harder for you to have a long, good week. So really having 3 good weekends here to end the year, put yourself in those top 6 at least. Like I said, could be all the way up to top 2 or 3, depending on how things go. But put yourself in that good situation with 3 good weekends.
And I love the way that our pitching is set up, because we're one of the deeper teams in the league with the number of arms that we can bring in and get outs. If we're in one of those top 3 seeds and we win the first game in double elimination, we are probably become the favorites to win that conference tournament. But you got to get there, and you're going to have a battle. I can promise you that. And they just got to keep doing what they've been doing, keep winning these series, taking one game at a time, being able to shrug off adversity. I mean, losing that game in the way they did on Saturday, it would have been easy to come out super flat on Sunday, be caught off guard, and all of a sudden now you've lost the home series to ULM. It didn't do that. It bounced back. Kenny Lavari should probably get a little bit of an award for bouncing it back so quickly with that nuke that he hit. I'm going to be talking about that for years. But yeah, go to San Marcos, get two, maybe three. Three would be great.
Yeah, and you know, I think you're dead on with the pitching. I think you're gonna see where some of these guys who have not necessarily pitched a ton, like you know Stephen Trone and Hudson Trobaugh and Nick Slepizio and Lincoln Ransom, they're gonna end up being big parts of things by the end. I mean, we know a lot of these other guys have competed and done really well. Marco Lavari, another guy. I mean, guys who have big arms have pitched well in the limited times they've had. And when it comes to that week where you got to just all of a sudden start piling in, these are guys going to come up in big situations. And I really see all those guys having success. I think it's going to be really neat. I think at the end of the year in that tournament, seeing some guys step up in some big spots.
It's going to be a very fun run to the end. So if you aren't on board the baseball train yet, you need to hop on there now because it doesn't get more exciting and more tight than it is right now, where every game absolutely matters. It's not 40 degrees watching us beat up on George Washington anymore. It is the real deal, and it's make or break. And I'm just really excited to see how these guys are playing ball right now. It's should be firing up some ODU fans to see how they're playing down the stretch here and what's still in front of them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've only got this weekend at Texas State, and then next weekend is going to be App State coming in. That'll be the last weekend at this configuration of the Bud. You're going to have, we'll have the, I'm sure the graduation ceremony probably on Saturday before the game, maybe after, I don't know what they're going to do this year. And then I would assume, I'm sure senior day on Sunday, which I, if I'm not mistaken, is that Mother's Day also? I don't know if it is or not, but senior day will be on Sunday. I don't even know how many, we have something like 10, 12 seniors. We have a solid amount this year. So that weekend's always fun. And then, you know, I said one weekend down there at Georgia State Southern, I get confused about
State
shorts. There we go. One of those two down there in Georgia. And I mean, they're literally going to get on a bus, go play a game in Richmond, then stay on that bus, go down to Georgia State and then go down to Alabama. So these guys are gonna be road warriors for the last couple weeks. Last time that happened for them, in 21, they were road warriors down to Louisiana for a few weeks. They were acting like they owned the place. So if we can take that vibe down to Montgomery this time, you know, good things can happen.
Absolutely. Well, this weekend, if you're, you know, one of the many who's probably not traveling all the way out to San Marcos, games will be streamed on ESPN Plus. At least that's what I am led to believe. 7 p.m. Friday, 3:30 Saturday, noon on Sunday. So definitely tune in, check it out. And then for anyone else who's in the 804 like me, Tuesday, May 7th at 6, they're going to play VCU at the Diamond. I'll be there. I know there's quite a few people that are going to be coming out. And then May 14th, the following Tuesday, 6 p.m., out at the University of Richmond in Henrico, they're going to be taking on the Spiders. So make plans the next 2 weeks to either get to the Bud, get to the Diamond, or over to the baseball field there at next to Robins Stadium on the campus of University of Richmond. But I'm excited for it, CB.
I'm excited too. I mean, it's, you know, it's the best, it's proving time. Let's have the guys go out and show how good they are.
Well, that'll do it for us today. Thank you all so much for listening. If you're not already, please subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. We love doing this and bringing you all the awesome stories of ODU baseball and the guys that are on the team and following them down the stretch here. I'm Gary. Go Monarchs.
I'm CB. Go Monarchs.